library, and I have passed out a prototype of a sort of enhanced information resources page that we've put together in the library. I've been talking with Nora over the months, and she's especially expressed interest in having the members of the committee be as knowledgeable as possible and have access to as much information as possible. And so what we've done is put together a prototype of a page that of a web page that would be on the committee web linked to on the committee web page that would include first links to our public policy, links to the world page on early childhood education, and that actually is the second page of your handout. And further, once we iron out all the details, we may include links to testimony that has been given at committee or reports mentioned by people at committee or reports suggested by members of the committee, and all of that needs to be ironed out with what might happen with an enhanced committee webpage with the IS staff and so on, probably this summer. In addition, we would, on this page, we'll link to groups that have appeared before the committee, and then links to a number of articles that are in magazines in the library and other electronic resources, and then further links to ways for you to search for additional articles for yourself from online full-text databases available through the library, the library's collection, and links to the newspaper databases as well. And we look at this as sort of being a one-stop way to find information on this topic, which would be customized to the committee, and we hope to expand it to other committees in the future. So I plan to get this linked quickly. There's not much, you know, your committee's going to pretty much go away pretty soon, but hopefully we'll have something in place for next session that would be very useful on an ongoing basis for you as you're researching issues. And we intend it to be useful for members, for staff, and for citizens who would be able to get to it from the web page as well. So you can just look at this. It actually is live right now at the URL that's in the top right-hand corner, although it will be linked to the committee page within a couple of days. So if anybody has any suggestions or comments on the page, I would love to hear them. And further, we'll look for ideas in probably in the middle of the summer and put together a little committee with people from both the House and the Senate and IS staff from the House and Senate as well.
Thank you. And members, where this comes from is the University of Minnesota has a VISTA system, and I know some people in the audience are from the University of Minnesota and maybe members you're familiar with it. But ideally, each committee would have a VISTA page where you could post testimony for the day, where the members could potentially go in and do something like a chat board, potentially could do it bipartisan. Even if you all would have a place to go, we'd have a place to go, a place where the public could go, as well as the research links. And this is a critical part of this, as we're getting into decision time here and we're trying to look at what's the best and the right thing to do for early childhood. We would have those links there to clear up also any questions. So it'd be easy resource for us. So thank you for putting it together. And are there any questions? Mm-hmm. I think we'll just continue. Representative Gottwalt.
Thank you, Chair Slowick. Is this also a place we might be able to put, for example, we've only got two work groups, I think, right now, but this would be a place we could have a home for work groups as well.
Representative Gottwalt, I would see that as a potential, too. I mean, I would like us to have a home for the different groups, and then you could potentially, you know, have links to that, off of that specifically. We have a parent engagement work group, and so there could be information about that, potentially linked to that group, and a systems work group. So I think that's a great idea. Good feedback. Good. Well, thank you, and thanks for working with us, and we look forward to seeing what comes next. And we have a couple of items of business, approval of the minutes, I guess, since it's her birthday, Representative Murphy. Representative Murphy moves the minutes of March 8th. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, tap the gavel. Okay, there we go. And the minutes are approved. Well, Representative Murphy, we want to wish you a happy birthday. We could sing to you, but did you bring treats for us?
I'm bringing treats on Thursday.
You are? Okay.
My birthday.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll wait to do it then. That's the tradition, members, as you might know, you have to bring treats on your own birthday. So, thanks. Good. And then we have a short fiscal presentation by Ms. Adrians, who is going to talk about some information that came out today.
Madam Chair, members, presentation might be a strong word for this. You have a budget page sheet, I believe, in your files. It's not blue, but it what it shows is a change item for child care assistance program. And what this is sort of an update on the governor's recommendations. And any repricing that happens with the governor's recommendations is typically based on changes that occurred in the February forecast. So you'll notice that the net fiscal impact of this new initiative is slightly different. I mean, I think in 2008 it's like $2,000 different. So we don't get too concerned about how much it changed, but you will notice that it changed just minimally, and that is why. And if you have any further questions, I'd be happy to talk to you about it.
Thank you. Good. With that, we will proceed with the bills. House File 1275, Representative Lesh. Welcome to the committee. Would someone like to move the bill?
Madam Chair, I'll move House File 1275 to be held over for the omnibus bill.
Mm-hmm. Representative Ward moves for House File 1275 for possible inclusion in the omnibus early childhood learning finance bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you for moving Representative Ward, and I appreciate you giving us time to be heard on these topics. What you have before you, Madam Chair, and members, are three bills that are the product of initiatives we've had in the city of St. Paul that are targeted towards helping out our kids. And with that, I would explain my bill first off, but Madam Chair, if it's okay, I'd like to introduce our mayor, the mayor of St. Paul, Chris Coleman, to provide overview of vision for our second shift initiative that out of which this springs.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chris Coleman, Mayor of St. Paul, members of the committee. I appreciate having an opportunity to testify before the committee this afternoon. It is really one of the hardest things that my staff has to do is to try to get me to stick to a script. I'm going to try to do that this afternoon, but I would encourage members of the committee, if there are any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer those, and then that would give me an opportunity to get off the script, and I can blame it on you instead of my staff blame me. When I was running for office, and as I took office, it became very clear that the city of St. Paul had to play a role in education, but what that role would be was less clear. We understood that there was a significant achievement gap between members of our community, between members of the white community and members of communities of color, that economic disparities led to greater achievement gaps. And so, therefore, we really reached out to the education community, to people that were working with children throughout the city of St. Paul, and said, what is it that you want the city of St. Paul to do? We know that in order to close the gap, that it is imperative that we increase rates of graduation from high school, that we get the children that graduate from high school to go on to post-secondary opportunities, and ultimately to join the workforce in a productive fashion. We're especially concerned about the academic achievements of the children in our city, and we know that income and issues of race definitely impact those opportunities to succeed. For Minnesota to be successful, not just the city of St. Paul, more of our children need to be successful in pursuing their education. The city of St. Paul is very interested in all the projects that the state has, and we want to be participants in that. As I said early on in my tenure, and quite frankly even before I was elected mayor, I sat down with teachers, with members of the school board, with parents, and said, what is it that you want us to do? They were very clear in their message. They said, we'll cover the hours that the children are in the school. We'll work with them. But we need assistance in working in those after-school hours. We need help with what we have dubbed the second shift. They said, we'll cover the first shift, you guys cover the second shift. The second shift has become and evolved into one of my top priorities, and that is making sure that all of those out-of-school hours that children spend, up to 2,000 hours during the course of a year that they are out of school and would have opportunities for learning, that we provide meaningful learning opportunities for them. This follows on the work of President Brunix from the University of Minnesota and his out-of-school time report, and really builds on a lot of the efforts that are already occurring in the community. We brought together over 300 stakeholders early on in December of 2005, before I was even sworn in, and asked them, what are the things that are occurring in the community? What are the things that are really working? What are the things that we should be trying to enhance? We learned that, again, that there are an incredible amount of activities that are occurring, but that there's a lot of disconnect between the opportunity for second shift activities and the children that actually need them. We saw that in our libraries and our rec centers, that our schools, nonprofits that serve youth, faith-based communities, foundation-funded collaboratives, and young people themselves are all working to support our children in new and exciting ways. We also learned that few of us in St. Paul knew what the others were doing. We learned that there are young people whose needs are not being met, whether it's through a lack of transportation or simply a lack of information or other barriers to keep them from getting to the programs that would help them in their out-of-school time. In thinking about what the role of the city could be, we looked at trying to coordinate these efforts better, coordinating the resources that enhance the learning outcomes and the pathways that children are on to improve themselves. We want to improve the interactions that our city staff already have with children. We restructured our libraries. We restructured our Parks and Rec Center to take better advantage of these second shift activities, the out-of-school learning opportunities, and to really try to take advantage of these 2,000 hours that kids would have that they're spending outside the school playground. It's not the core function of the city to educate the children. It certainly is not the core function of City Hall. While it may be our collective duty, it is not the mayor's job to run what's happening in the school district. But we knew that in partnership with the school district, in partner with these other organizations, with our Parks and Rec Department, et cetera, we could truly make a difference. We have 41 rec centers. We have 13 branch libraries. We have bookmobile service to our residents. If we can better use these assets, better utilize the assets that we have, we know that we can make a significant impact on these out-of-school learning opportunities for children. The workers at these facilities are tremendous. They're dedicated. They believe in public service. They believe in helping our children and our community, and they will do whatever they can to enhance the learning opportunity. We have a wealth of resources after school. This network of programs is very deep. But again, what we found was that the kids that could use these programs weren't necessarily being connected to them. In order to do that, again, we're changing the way that we're delivering services in the city of St. Paul. But we believe that assistance from the legislature to help us kind of go to the next step is absolutely critical in this effort. We need to start treating every minute of a child's day as a learning opportunity. Every adult who has contact with a child should be viewed as a potential teacher if we're to provide access to life and learning experiences that will propel children to becoming successful lifelong learners. Statistics obviously support the efforts that we're undertaking. Approximately 8 million children between the ages of 5 and 14 spend time without adult supervision on a regular basis. Children without adult supervision are at greater risk for truancy from school, stress, poor grades, risk-taking behavior, and substance abuse. Juvenile crime rate triples between the hours of 3 and 6 p.m. School leaders report a higher degree of cooperation, school engagement, and better grades due to participation in quality after-school programs. Graduation rates can rise to over 90% when we invest in this out-of-school time program. The Mott Foundation issued a report recently called A New Day for Learning, and it puts it quite simply, quote, unless we profoundly change our thinking and policies about when, where, and how children learn and develop, our steady progress as an economy and as a society will end. This is not just a crisis for our schools. Every institution, stakeholder group, and community, as well as every citizen, must understand the critical need to do more for our children. There remains a profound gap between the knowledge and skills most students learn in school and the knowledge and skills demanded for the 21st century. Students need to learn academic content through real-world examples, applications, and experiences, both inside and outside school. After-school programs can serve as an entry point for many children and youth to both develop 21st century skills and expand their knowledge and skills in becoming future citizens. Education is core to the quality of life in St. Paul, and I think throughout the state of Minnesota. We must start today if we want tomorrow to be a promise for our kids. For our state's children to succeed academically, we must not let pass any occasion to provide opportunities for children to learn or for parents to learn about their children's education. The assistance of the state at this point is critical to our efforts. With your help, we can reach those children who aren't currently being reached. We can connect them to the programs that will work, and we will make a difference for the children, not just in St. Paul, but throughout the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mayor Coleman. Appreciate you coming today. Representative Lesh, I see you have maybe seven or eight testifiers, and hopefully they will be 1 or 2 minutes each because we have to, a lot of bills to get in today. How you want to proceed with testimony or take some questions?
We talk very fast in St. Paul, Mayor.
Okay. Why don't we go through the testimony? Is it Heidi? And Nan?
If I could, Madam Chair, if I could be heard briefly to describe the first bill, because I've got 1275, and then okay. Representative Murphy and Representative Mariani had a subsequent two. I don't have the list of all the testifiers in front of me, but if I could just be heard to give a short description of this,
yes.
That's okay?
Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, for the last several years, the West Side Circulator has been the first approach to free, accessible neighborhood transportation. It promotes youth community engagement and boosting academic outcomes by connecting youth to enriching learning and development experiences during non-school hours. West Side Circulator is a bus whose route and stops link the West Side's learning sites, libraries, parks, recreation centers, and other local organizations during non-school hours. Children ages 5 to 18 years old utilize this mode of transportation to travel to and from home and between program sites. Since its inception, programs have reported increased participation rates. The community has voiced a stronger sense of connection to the learning opportunities in the entire neighborhood, and program staff have become more intentional about communicating across programs and program development, similar to what Mayor Coleman just spoke of. The circulator helps to connect and build these relationships among staff and community organizations. Over and over again, we hear that transportation is a huge access issue, particularly in large urban centers and smaller rural towns. A lack of coordinated transportation plans by schools, programs, or communities can limit the access to out-of-school programs. Based on the knowledge, success and knowledge gained from implementing this circulator on the west side, the city would like to expand neighborhood circulator routes to serve other communities in the city that need it. That's the east side, Payne, Phelan, North End, Thomasdale, and Summit University. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Heidi Barajas, Associate Dean, College of Education and Human Development at the University of Minnesota. That's what got me here. I'm also a mother of 4 children and 2 grandchildren who live in St. Paul. I'm speaking for myself and also on behalf of the Dean, Darlene Bailey, who could not be here today, and support the Mayor's comments that in order for us to make sure that our children are well prepared to become productive citizens, we need to do this in partnership with many people. Research shows that for our children to be well prepared, learning opportunities must be available and accessible to children beyond what is provided during in-school hours. As Halpin's research reports in Teachers College Record, following home and school, after-school programs are coming to be a third critical developmental setting for low- and moderate-income children. For example, in the area of math and science, after-school and community science programs have become widely recognized as important sanctuaries for science learning for low- and suburban youth, and is offering them missing opportunities. Besides providing safe spaces for our children, after-school programs result in academic and behavioral improvement, which the mayor has already discussed. In the new College of Education and Human Development, we recognize that if we are to close not only the gap, but all the gaps, we must shift away from a focus on schools alone. Schools and other organizations, including community organizations and our local government, need to work in partnership to create and deliver the best supports for our children and families. We have expected for some time that one institution, that institution being schools, deliver everything necessary for child development within a structure that was created to deliver content-specific information regardless of the diversity of the experience walking through those classroom doors. Schools do a lot, but they can't do everything. We can meet the demands of not only a changing demography, but can provide for all the kids, all of our kids, the experiences that many of us in this room have been able to provide for our own children because of our personal resources. Learning outside of in-school time in the form of private lessons, library story hours, or special tutor and mentor opportunities. Kids in St. Paul can have those same experiences if they have meaningful community programs around them and have access to those programs. Building on this kind of model, we're talking about St. Paul cannot, this is not a program that can be limited to St. Paul and its citizens. The University of Minnesota, along with other major universities across the country, are moving to the partnership model by creating multidisciplinary arenas to address societal needs. This is one of those models. We have the opportunity today to do the same thing in St. Paul, and this can become a model for the entire state and the nation. But to do so, St. Paul needs infrastructure supports as outlined in the bills before you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If you may want to come up and choose Nan Skelton and Maria McNamara. Representative Lush, did you have a...
No, okay. That's fine.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, I am Nan Skelton. I am at the Humphrey Institute at the University of Minnesota. I have been working with the City of St. Paul and its West Side neighborhood for the past 10 years, and today I'm going to just speak briefly about the West Side Neighborhood Learning Community, which was the birthplace of the idea of the West Side Circulator, which is the bill that is before us with 1275. The West Side Neighborhood Learning Community is a network of people and organizations on the West Side who are working to strengthen learning for the children in that neighborhood. In 2000, neighbors, parents, youth, teachers, and other professionals decided that if children's learning was to improve, that then the entire neighborhood needed to be engaged in that learning process. And everyone needed to be about learning, and what needed to happen was we needed to create a culture of learning, not just learning that happens during these hours on these days when you're these ages, but the whole culture of the neighborhood needed to be about learning. To do that, ordinary citizens in the neighborhood took on the responsibility of the whole community's children. And they said three things need to happen. One, we need to highlight the learning opportunities that exist in our neighborhood so that children know they exist and parents and families know they exist. Secondly, we need to ensure that the staff of agencies like the library and other organizations have the skills, the content material, and the cultural understanding needed to help the kids. And third, we need to ensure that the children have access to the learning opportunities that are there, thus the creation in people's minds that we have to have a vehicle. It became a bus. It is a bus that goes around the neighborhood on a daily basis so that kids can get on it at one place and move to the library and move to Boys and Girls Club, move to Neighborhood House, and move to all of the places where learning can happen. What's interesting is those are the three things that people determined needed to happen. That's what we've been working on for the last 4 or 5 years. It has been highly successful. If you look at the three things that people said that were needed, creating and highlighting learning opportunities, House File 1277 is really about how do we get the information out to people so that they know those opportunities exist. The second thing that people said needed to happen was to ensure that the staff of agencies had the skills, had the knowledge, had the content. That's really what House File 1276 is about. And finally, 1275 is really about how do we make sure that all the resources that are available are accessible to kids. They have to have a way to get there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Did you bring that bus that's out in the hall?
Yes, there is a bus in the hall. You must see it. That was done by the College of Design and the children from the West Side neighborhood.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record. And
my name is Maria McNamara, Madam Chair and members. I am a parent from the west side of St. Paul, and I am here representing numerous other parents and citizens who have worked so hard to create the circulator that serves our west side community. Way back in 1998, a series of community forums on the west side revealed that the number two pressing need for families, second only to more English classes, was a transportation system that could do better than simply get people in and out of the neighborhood. Parents, especially the large percentage who were new Americans, were looking for a way to connect their children and themselves to the cultural and educational offerings they heard about but were unable to access simply because the buses just don't go there. In 2003, when the circulator made its initial loop around the neighborhood, it removed a long-standing barrier for many Westside kids who had never been to the Riverview Library or participated in Humboldt's Open Swim or played up at Cherokee Park. Even one relatively longtime family discovered something that was new to them, the Westside Boys and Girls Club, tucked away in a remote corner of the neighborhood. Their kids are now members and participate in after-school programming. And families are not the only ones to benefit. The 17 organizations who took part in the planning process soon began to notice that all these kids moving around the neighborhood were bringing with them new information about what was going on and when and where. And the kids were making their own connections. Through the kids, agencies began to see the circulator as a means for increased collaboration and resource sharing. Everyone was working with the same kids, the same families, in the same geographical space. Why couldn't they work together? They did. The following year, the circulator not only connected community places, but also for 9 weeks, it transported kids to a series of free community-run summer camps called All Around the Neighborhood. The concept and the implementation were so successful that the camps, and of course the bus, are now running year-round. The summer service provided kids with 4,600 rides, and the school year ridership will exceed 6,000. Connected places led directly to strong, coordinated programs. Children who attend summer school in the morning can have lunch at the rec center and then jump on the bus to a camp or library program for the afternoon, because everything is intentionally linked and coordinated. Westside nonprofits continue to come to the table to talk about the circulator because it allows them to do more with the resources they have. In the end, though, it's about the kids on the bus and what we do to keep them safe, connected, and engaged in active learning. A recent study cites safety and freedom of movement as a necessary quality for a city or neighborhood to be considered good for its young people. Even a mom whose one contribution is to ride the loop with one eye on her knitting and the other on what's brewing in the back seats is providing an authentic community service. The circulator gives kids a sense of mastery and independence in a context of community and interdependence. It takes them to places of learning, but it is a learning experience in and of itself. The average 9-year-old who hops on the circulator is learning what it means to be in community. She is learning to navigate in the larger world, both in the concrete sense of calculating some very real math problems of time and frequency of service, but also in the more metaphorical sense of greatly expanded relationships. Kids develop a stronger sense of belonging, and they tell us that they like it. To me, the circulator is a critical piece of infrastructure that allows families to better access the existing richness of our community and to be active participants in its ongoing development. When they do that, the web is strengthened and stewardship grows. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. We have Isamad and Kalia can come up. Now, we're going to try to really cut it short, guys, if we could go to like a minute each, because there are some questions, and we want to make sure we get to those next. Welcome to the committee, if you could state your name for the record.
Isamad Nkambi. Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Simon Nkambi, and I am part of the Second St. Paul Second Shift Youth Commission. We are a group of high school students from one of each neighborhood that provide input and policy issues that affect our lives. I'm here to testify on House File 1275. As you heard from other testimonies today, there are a lot of evidence showing the benefits of out-of-school time activities for youth. Yet, for many youth, barriers to transportation make participating in these activities difficult. I'm here to tell you my personal story about the circulator on the West Side and how it's positively impacted my life. I attend Humboldt Senior High on the West Side. I'm playing on the baseball and football team. For practice, we often walk from school to the West Side Boys and Girls Club to use their practice fields. The Boys and Girls Club offers free memberships to Humboldt athletes who practice on their fields. It was difficult for me to get to the Boys and Girls Club. Some days, I was not there for practice. It was especially hard in the winter. Also, the walk to the club from school, I had to cross Robert Street, which was very busy. Now I take the West Side Circulator from outside of Humboldt High School to club. I've been involved with club for 3 years and a member of the Keystone Club. Club has made me has played a huge difference in my life and made me a great leader. The opportunity, now I have the opportunity to go to the national conference for leadership. Without the circulator, it would be hard for me to be involved in these opportunities. I also wanted to tell you about other kids on the West Side that use the circulator, especially younger children in elementary school. Parents who have children who attend Cherokee Heights Elementary School do not want them walking all the way to club after school. They really do not want them to cross busy streets like Robert. But lots of these kids' parents work and they need a safe place that they can go after school. The circulator picks them up outside of their school and now they can come to club. It's much safer. Lastly, the circulator is really important because kids who live and go to school on the West Side have many more options about what to do after school. They can go to Baker Recreation Center. Many of them go to the Boys and Girls Club, but they can go to library or El Rio too. This helps kids to get to know a lot of different people on the West Side and really brings the community together. I strongly urge that you support House File Bill 1275 so that youth across St. Paul can get involved in after-school programs. Now I'm going to turn it over to Kalia.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Kalia Herr, and I am also a commissioner on the St. Paul Fellowship Youth Commission. I'm here to testify on House File number 1275. I live in the East Bluff neighborhood and on the east side of St. Paul. As an east side, I believe that a neighborhood circulator would greatly improve the lives of youth in my neighborhood. As part of the Second Shift Youth Commission, I am helping lead a youth mapping project in the Dane's Bluff neighborhood. I am working with elementary and junior high students to document all the places youth can get involved after school. Talking to some of these youth mappers, I learned that they walk long distances from their home to get to the library after school. Even to walk from Dane's Bluff Elementary School, they had to cross 7th Street, which is a very busy street. I don't think this is safe for kids, especially difficult in the winter. As also through our mapping project, we found a portion of the neighborhood that is geographically separated from Highway 94 and can only get to the rest of the neighborhood by going over a bridge. This is an area that's very residential, and youth will be difficult to get to the after-school programs. Having a circulator in my neighborhood would make a huge difference. Not only would it be safer for kids to get to after-school programs, but it would expand their horizons by making more places accessible. Youth will get to experience so many more things that it will help to do better in school and be stronger community leaders. Youth will be able to get to the library when they need help with homework. These same kids could also get to Dane's Bluff or Margaret Rec Center to play in a community sports team or to join the teen club. A circulator will connect my neighborhood so that more people get to know one another and different adults in my neighborhood. Also, I believe kids will spend less time inside watching television and more time involved in activities that will help them academically and socially. The circulator is a really innovative idea to solve transportation problems that so many of us youth face. It is good for youth, but it's also good for our neighborhood. When I graduate from college, I hope to be a doctor, and Samad hopes to be a sport therapist. I hope that you will support House File number 1275 to help us get there. Thank you.
Thank you. And so your T-Search match your potential careers, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to have one more, and then we're going to take a couple questions. If we can have Janice, and if you can do it in 30 seconds, I would be ever so grateful. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, I think if we could, actually. Okay, thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Janice LaFlo, and I'm here today as the Interim Executive Director of the American Indian Family Center, as well as a volunteer on the District 5 Planning Council. I want to thank the youth for taking the time today to come and offer their testimony. It takes a lot of courage to come up here and sit, and want to thank all of the organizations and the teachers and their parents for helping build youth that are capable of coming to sit here and offer testimony. I have three different points that I will make quickly. The first being the process for the youth circulator bus on the east side has been in the works for some time, and we are nearly ready to go. We believe that the youth circulator bus on the east side will do exactly and everything it's done on the west side. As a member of the American Indian Family Center, it's important that our community be engaged in a manner that reduces the isolation that our families and our youth experience. A circulator bus will allow the connection of services and engage our youth. As a member of the Payne-Phelan District 5 Planning Council, I can offer you the authentic collaboration that really has brought together our faith-based communities, our community agencies, and many members in our community to do that good planning that will produce a successful route and circulator bus. And lastly, as a parent who lives on the east side, I have two children. I have three children, but two children who would benefit from the opportunity of riding a circulator bus. They're both middle school and high school age, and as a working parent, it becomes difficult to transport them to after school activities. And that's the more important thing, is being able to engage those youth to access the services that already exist for an after school opportunity. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Lesh and committee members, I think what we're going to do is take a couple questions. I'm trying to get all three bills done by five. So I'll just tell you, whoever, Representative Mariani, hopefully you won't get shorted and we can get through this process. But we do want to thank you for your time. And I've been on the other end of your committee sometimes. We still have to do that committee challenge thing sometime, too. Our committee challenging his committee. So we'll see about that. We have Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to be quick. I have a lot of questions about this bill, but I'll try not to use them all up here. One of them is, if this is so great, and I don't disagree, and I want to thank all the testifiers, too. I come from St. Cloud, District 15A, and we'd certainly love to have something like this there. So my question is, why, if this is so good for St. Paul, why isn't St. Paul doing it?
Madam Chair, Representative Gott, well, first of all, St. Paul took the initiative to make this happen at the front end, and the folks that were in charge of it did the heavy lifting to make sure that it was funded. That funding has expired, but perhaps a better answer might come from Valley Bar or the mayor himself. I could yield to him, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Gottwald, first of all, you just heard testimony that on the west side we are doing this. We're doing it in partnership with community foundations. McKnight Foundation has given us a substantial grant to do that. Their grant is set to expire this year. This is the last year that they will do that. I also kind of remind the members of the committee of the significant budget challenges that we faced in the city of St. Paul. We had a $16.5 million budget deficit for the year 2007, and it gets worse from here. But one of the things that we did do is that not only to cut costs to deal with that deficit, but to rearrange how we deliver services in the city of St. Paul, we switched how we deliver parks and rec services and library services to better, from our perspective, to better able to serve these children through these after-school programs. The additional partnership with the state to make sure that we get kids to those programs would be very significant. We're trying to arrange the delivery of services to make it more effective.
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, I would still argue many of our cities face struggles, Mayor. I served on a city council for 9 years, and I understand that. But I do question whether or not we should be using state money for this. I also have a question, frankly, of our chair. This seems to be a transportation funding bill. This would also seem to be not a early childhood learning bill, but maybe a K-12 finance issue, if anything. I've got some other questions regarding the fundamentals of the bill, but maybe you could speak to that.
Representative Gottwald, as you know, we're new in our referral of bills, but we looked at where this could go and should go, and we felt because the after-school enrichment program money falls within this committee's purview, that would be an appropriate place for it, because the circulator is primarily taking kids around after school and in the summers. So that's the connection and why that this bill is in this committee. Representative Galbraith.
Madam Chair, then I'm a little confused, too, because we were talking, I think youth and children are referenced in the bill. There's no definition of age, but you, Representative Lesch, I think, mentioned 5 to 18 years of age, which maybe that's close to early childhood, but not quite. Is there a restriction on where somebody comes from who can use this? Are you going to have a pass? How do people get on this thing? How do we provide security with the bus system? Those are some of the other things.
Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you. Valerie Barrow. I'm the Education Director for the Mayor's Office. And thank you for that question. How we have dealt with that issue in the past is having the community participate in planning for how those issues will be handled. So, for example, an issue of safety comes up over and over again, and how some of our programs on the west side have dealt with that is by having volunteers who volunteer in programs will ride on the bus, or parents will ride on the bus, or if it's a young child, perhaps a parent will ride with the child on the bus to make sure that they need to get off where they are supposed to. Currently, we do not use a bus pass on the west side. If you are a resident of the west side and using the services on the west side, the service is there for the residents to use, for the kids to be able to use to get around from program to program. We have one bus driver currently on the west side, and that bus driver has worked throughout the summers and is there now all year round, and he does get to know the kids, and so he knows which kids are from the west side and which ones are not, and then is connecting with program staff to make sure that kids are supposed to be where they are.
Representative Gottwald, we still have two more questions. So
I'll ask one more. There are others, but I'll ask one more. You mentioned that this is meant to reduce truancy under line 1.16, Representative Lesch. Yet on line 1.18, you mentioned that these experiences are for after school and on Saturdays. How does after school and on Saturdays reduce truancy?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I think the mayor can speak of that also. But this is part and parcel of the mayor's entire second shift initiative. This all comes together in one package and is the product of a lot of people working together in the city of St. Paul that addresses all those issues as they impact and affect truancy. These youth need to be able to rely on certain programs that they know are going to be there, and that's why we say that it is meant to address truancy, because they'll know this is there during the school day, but also on weekends, too.
Representative Gottwald.
Brief follow-up. I have a deep problem with this bill just from the perspective of this is great for the city of St. Paul. I don't understand the state's role in funding this, frankly. We have these same discussions when I sat on our St. Cloud City Council all the time about our needs and wants for transportation and after-school activities. We've never come to the state and asked for $700,000 in each of 2 years to pay for those things. We paid for it ourselves as a community.
Mayor Coleman.
Representative Stawick, Representative Gottwald, and members of the committee. One of the things that we do believe is that there should be a statewide system, and it should be a statewide model, but the fact is the city of St. Paul, through 4 years of experience, has demonstrated that the effectiveness of this program. I believe it is all of our collective responsibility to deal with how children learn, and I think the research, and it goes to your previous question, Representative Gottwald, about why this affects truancy. The research clearly shows that children that are engaged in meaningful after-school activities are more likely to be engaged in school and are more likely to participate. So it clearly goes to the issue of truancy. But at the same time, because of the work that's been done in the city of St. Paul, because of the work that's been done through a community building process and the partnerships, we are prepared at this point to expand this program to the east side of the city of St. Paul, where the need is extremely great. That impacts all of us at a state level, because to the extent that we are having these kids move through college, high school, graduate, go on to college, get into the workforce, the long-term benefits to the state of Minnesota, I think, are obvious and clear. So we don't suggest that this is only a St. Paul program. We think that we're a model that we can show other communities that how successful this can be, and the long-term benefits to all involved are will be obvious.
Representative Wardlow.
All my questions were answered. Maybe is there a stop at the state capitol for the children that come to the legislature like ourselves?
Madam Chair, Representative Wardlow, no, but we'll stop by your house. I hear you have cheese and crackers.
Well, I kind of hoard them. You know.
Representative Fritz.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for bringing this forward. I'm from rural Minnesota, and I was born and raised out on the farm, so when we got back to the farm, we stayed there, but we wanted to come into town, and I think I got up to the cities once for the Shrine Circuits, and we took a bus, thanks to our bus owner. and I think it's much different now. But I wanted to hear the East Side, because all of my Irish relatives were from the East Side of St. Paul, and I wanted to make sure that they were going to be involved in this bill as well. And in the old days, when I would come up to visit my East Side cousins, they went to the YMCA all the time, and I was like, wow, this is just a great place for them to go, and they took me along, and I wondered what happened to those places, and are we now just trying to take the place of what it was the Y did for my cousins by giving kids, and I think these are more opportunities here, I shouldn't say that. I'm sure the Y did and still does in some respects, gives those opportunities to those kids, but I would want this also to be a statewide thing. I'm looking at the folks way down in Blooming Prairie and down in southern Minnesota where I come from who could also use the opportunities that the kids up here are going to have. But again, where are we going to find the money? And I think as far as I'm concerned, these are our best resources, our children.
Mayor Coleman, briefly, and then we'll need to move on.
Just briefly, Representative Fritz, members of the committee, I think that your description of what happens at the Y is a really good example of why this is necessary and why we're prepared to take advantage of it. Because if you not only went to the YMCA that's connected to Johnny Johnson High School or grade school, elementary school over on the East Side, but you went to the Boys and Girls Club that some of our youth commissioners talked about, you would see that those opportunities to really engage kids in a meaningful direction is there. The problem is kids aren't engaging because they can't get to them. So they sit in and they fall in bad habits, or they watch TV, or they play video games, or they do everything other than continue their learning day. The programs are there. We got to get the kids to them, and this bill does that.
Thank you very much. Representative Ward renews his motion that House File 1275 be included for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee. Thank you, Representative Lush.
Thank you, Manager and members.
Okay, House File 1276, Representative Murphy, welcome to the committee. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'd like to move House File 1276 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Murphy moves House File 1276 for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Learning Finance Bill.
And then
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have an A1 amendment, which I'd like to move to get the bill into the shape I would like it.
Okay.
Representative, and it should be in your packet.
Members, A1, Representative Murphy moves amendment A1. Is there any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I understand that I have 5 minutes and we have a couple of testifiers, so I'm going to be very brief.
Thank you.
House File 1276 provides grants to the City of St. Paul for staff development. This bill will help kids and parents and families for providing a better quality experience at St. Paul's rec centers and libraries. Passage of this bill will marshal the opportunity of both time and place by strengthening learning environments outside of the classroom and so advancing overall learning. It's good for kids and it's good for families. Joining me today are Ms. Heidi Bahara. Is that correct?
Bahara.
Thank you very much. Robin Madsen, and then Lisa Thompson is going to join us as well, and if she could come up to the table, that would be great.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed.
Heidi Barajas, Associate Dean, College Education and Development. Very briefly, after-school programming needs to be in place. But programs must also be quality programs delivered appropriate. And as the research suggests, an extended day of learning cannot just be more of the same. So we can't just have time on task and rote work being done. It has to be academic activities with recreational activities, social development, and sometimes just downtime for kids. It needs to be more than just a babysitting service. It can't be either one end of those continuums. In order for that to happen, you have to have professional development. In the College of Education and Human Development, we are constantly going through professional development. It doesn't matter how good we think we are at what we do, we can always be better at it. As Carla Sanger, director of LA's Best, discussed in terms of after-school programs, her employees go through extensive training, and she states, good adult supervision requires a lot of generosity. These are people with good hearts, they know what they're doing, but they deserve, and our children deserve, for them to have the professional development to offer them the quality of the program that we want them to have. So we need to, in kind, provide generous professional development. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Robin Madsen. I live on the east side of St. Paul, just to let you know that. I am an executive board member of AFSCME Council 5, as well as on the St. Paul Trades and Labor Assembly Executive Board. I'm also the president of AFSCME Local 1842, which is the City of St. Paul technical employees. And in that role, I represent staff in the library and in the parks, as well as in other departments. I'm a 30-year St. Paul Public Library employee. We call ourselves LIFERS. I work on the bookmobile, which is also works in partnership with the Rondo Community Outreach Library. It's in that role that I'm here today to talk about how I've experienced firsthand the changing faces of the customers that we serve. Every day we see people from a wide variety of cultures and backgrounds. We now see a great many Hmong, Somali, Hispanic, Russian, among many other people. We see many children now, many more children from families where both parents are working full-time, as well as kids from single-parent families. Their needs are vast and varied, and we must address them. They're often left come alone to the library or the rec center, or they come with a big brother or sister who's maybe 8 or 9, but these kids come alone. Both parks and rec and libraries have excellent, hardworking staff that provide programs and activities. The St. Paul Public Library has 5 homework centers at various branches. There are story times in the branches, and there's a teen program at the Highland Park branch. Parks and Rec offers S'more Fun, a school-age child care, at various centers during the school year when the school is closed and in the summer. Rec Check is also available for kids to come after school. Staff work very hard to provide activities that will engage these children and offer opportunities to be have a positive experience working with adults as well as other kids. These kids come after school. They come when they get out of school. They come often alone. In the library, the computers and the tables are all full after school. Budget issues in the last 10 years have greatly limited the amount of resources available for training for staff. Our environment is changing so rapidly, and the community with it, that the staff is in a constant state of flux. In the library, our jobs have evolved from a somewhat passive role to one of active information brokering, finding the needs of the community and the kids and filling those information gaps. To do this, we need a wide range of skills for which we have not necessarily been trained. Parks and Rec staff see the same challenges. New resources like this would provide staff opportunities for training in things like advanced computer skills, diversity training, language training, early childhood as regular child development, web design, just to name a few, all of which will help to increase the quality of our programs and in turn help to produce positive youth outcomes. This is an investment in the current staff and will also help to attract and retain new staff, people of color who look like the people we serve. Providing our staff with additional training will increase their skills, and it will also help to successfully implement the second shift, the new reorganization in the Parks and Rec Department, as well as the library strategic plan, which has a strong focus on youth and children. And I encourage you today to support this bill. If you have any questions, I'm available for answers. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could be very brief, we would very much appreciate it.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Lisa Thompson. I'm a family child care provider. I live on the east side of St. Paul. And I'm here to talk about the, to thank Representative Murphy for adding a bit to talk about the proposal to improve licensed family child care as a direct contact between county programs and parents. We have intimate contact with families on a day-to-day basis, and it's often language and culturally specific to each family. This would give the county opportunities to directly get information and about money that's already being spent to the families and the children that need it.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions? Okay, well, thank you. Representative Murphy renews her motion to move House File 1276 for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you. Members, while we're waiting for Representative Mariani, I want to go over the process of what we're going to be doing the next couple days. Thursday, we will finish our final bills. We'll meet during our regular committee time. We will have a break from 5:30. From 5:30 to 6, you're invited for pizza, and we'll have some social time and talk a little bit. At 6 o'clock, we'll come back here, and we will hear our final bills. On Tuesday, we will be releasing, and for those of you in the public, we will be releasing our bill on Tuesday. We will have a cleaning where we will go over our bill. If you're interested in testifying, see Sarah Benzkoper or sign up on the list. On that Thursday, we will also be taking public testimony on our bill, and we'll also be doing any final amendments, and we will pass our bill out on Thursday afternoon. And that will be our last committee meeting that we know of at this time, unless we need to call another one. Is Representative Meyer here? Okay, well, Representative Eastland, are you ready?
I can be.
Okay. Oh, Representative Peterson?
Madam Chair, you said Thursday, I understand this Thursday, and then it's a week from Thursday for that second meeting for the testimony?
Yes.
Tuesday, testimony on Tuesday and Thursday.
Tuesday and Thursday. We'll release the bill so the public will be seeing it for the first time on Tuesday.
Thursday.
And by Thursday, of course, we'll have had some chance to look it over as well as any potential amendments will be presented at that time. But because of our deadline for getting the bill out and to Representative Murphy's committee, we need to be done by Thursday. So we'll have to do what it takes to finish up. Representative Lesh?
Madam Chair, if I could just have someone speak to Representative Mariani's bill since he's not here very briefly.
We'll start with testimony. Are you testifying with one testifier? Okay, why don't we start with testimony and I'll come in the meantime.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
If you'd like to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Marnie Wells, and I'm the second shift coordinator for the City of St. Paul, and I'm thrilled to be here to talk to you about the virtual one-stop shop. As you've heard prior to me sitting up here, we have an academic gap, not only in the City of St. Paul, but certainly in the state of Minnesota. Other folks like to refer to that academic gap as an opportunities gap. And we know that filling that gap doesn't take one silver bullet or one size fits all. And having access to knowledge around and knowledge of programs that are existing in the City of St. Paul through the virtual one-stop, we believe we can help fill that gap. The vision of the City of St. Paul is where the in-school and the out-of-school learning blends together. The virtual one-stop shop is a comprehensive web-based database where families, service providers, and young people will be able to access information around the variety of programs that exist. We are still taking inventory. It's very exciting in St. Paul. We have nearly 850 programs that we've identified so far. And I bet if you talk to me tomorrow, there'll be more. Having this virtual one-stop shop, we believe families will have access to a wide continuum of opportunities for all of our young people, such as cultural experiences, sports activities, arts and crafts, work readiness, tutoring, homework help, and all done in nurturing and safe environments. We believe that the virtual one-stop shop, again, an online database, is an important tool to better connect young people to relevant and accessible out-of-school time activities. We know that we can reach a broad audience with this tool. We've seen it done in other places. And we also believe that this virtual one-stop shop is an added layer to the initiatives that are coming from the City of St. Paul, and we've seen, again, in other parts of our country with great success. The virtual one-stop, the absolute primary goal is to make it very user-friendly, recognizing that not everyone has high-tech skills or even access to computers, so we know that we need to have this information in multiple languages and use non-traditional ways of reaching out to the community so they understand that they have many opportunities to learn in both the formal and the informal setting. This function is critical with helping us shape programs that will be relevant and in demand. We know that we can see that these programs make a difference, and in order to be more effective and more efficient in putting that gap, working on the achievement gap, we feel that this is a tool that will help us get there. In short, we will finally be able to match people to their programs in a relevant and culturally appropriate manner. And I thank you for giving me the time to talk to you about the virtual one-stop shop.
Thank you. I think what we're going to have to do here is we're going to have to proceed with Representative Eastland's bill and then come back to the bill and move it and be able to move it for inclusion. So hopefully he's going to walk in here shortly or...
Could I... I mean, I... Madam Chair, could I stand in for him for the purposes of moving it? I mean, does he have to be here as often?
I'm trying to get a technical interpretation here, Representative Lesh, and see if that's possible. That was very technical. We're not sure.
Madam Chair.
Representative Wardlow?
Madam Chair, I had a bill up in K-12 policy, and I was sick, and so Representative Erdahl presented it for me.
Okay.
So I say go for it.
Hey, sure. I recall in past years when towards the end of session when the majority party was swamped with bills and other folks would stand in for people.
Okay.
I remember them doing that.
That being said, the chair moves House File 1277 for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee bill. Is there any discussion or questions? Okay, well, thank you for coming, and we will have your bill for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you.
House File 1264, Representative Eastland. Thank you all for coming and being with us today for your testimony. Welcome to the committee. Would you like to move your bill?
What are we going to do with the bill, Madam Chair? Do you have a? Is it going to go to taxes again, or is it going to? I guess you have to make that call.
Representative Eastland, my understanding is your bill will have to go to taxes because there's a significant tax credit in there.
Okay. So then I guess I would move House File 1264.
Okay.
Pass and move out the taxes. And then I assume we'll come back here, but time probably won't permit, so we'll see how that works. But.
Representative Eastland, do you have an amendment?
Yes, I have an amendment, the A1 amendment. And I guess I'd move the amendment, first of all, if that's for your pleasure, Madam.
Okay. Representative Eastland moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. Representative Eastland, is your bill in the shape that you want it?
Well, it's getting closer. Yep.
Thank you. It would be Representative Eastland moves House File 1264 be recommended to pass as amended and return to the Committee on Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness for further referral to the Committee on Taxes. With that, if you'd like to proceed with your testimony.
Okay, Madam Chair, this bill has evolved a little bit, but the bill that we have here before you today, the amended version, is strictly a funding vehicle for funding some of the early childhood needs that we have been talking about in this committee for the last several months. I think we've talked a lot about the policy. We've heard from child care providers. We've heard from early education providers. We've heard lots of different information about the kinds of things we should be doing for the early learning opportunities for our kids. So what I've done in this bill is I basically left all of that policy out and I focused only on how we could possibly fund this and stay within where I think the values of at least some in this committee, and I think MELF, and I think we've heard a number of other advocates promote. And so the values that we're really trying to promote in this bill is choice, parental choice, and a very targeted component so that we know we're targeting the most at-risk kids. What the bill does basically is creates two tax credits, and I'll explain how they work. One tax credit is used primarily to focus on at-risk kids, and the way that tax credit would work is the bill creates it could be several, it could be one. The original bill was one nonprofit, it was the MELF organization. But the bill in its current state creates any number of nonprofits that are approved by the Commissioner of Education that could act as grantees for families with children that wanted to access early childhood programs or kindergarten. The tax credit that I've created in the bill is a tax credit for businesses and corporations who are interested in supporting early childhood initiatives. In the context of the testimony that we've had here over the past several months, we've heard from Minnesota Business Partnership. We've heard from MELF, which is a business-oriented organization. We've heard from, not directly, but I've read and I've talked to people from the chamber. Art Rolnick, who's from the Federal Reserve Bank. There are a lot of people from the private sector who are pushing very hard and who see early learning investments as very, very valuable. And so what I've done is created an opportunity for the private sector to step up to the plate and be able to provide some of the revenue that it's going to take to provide early learning programs for our youngest and most at-risk kids. And so the first tax credit that we've created is a credit for business, corporate, and other business to be able to contribute and get a direct tax credit off of their taxes due to the state of Minnesota. They would give those to nonprofit organizations that are approved by the Commissioner of Education, and those organizations would in turn issue the grants to families that had children who qualify. The second credit that I've created in here is a credit that, the way the bill is drafted, anyone could access. Simply any family that wanted to access an early learning program for their child could pay for that program and qualify for a tax credit themselves on their own taxes if they have tax due to the state of Minnesota. That is really the core of the bill. And so what we've done is created the funding mechanism that we think we could use so that we honor a couple of important principles, and one of the principles is choice. It gives families the ability to be able to choose and control where and how their kids are going to get early learning, because I think there still is a concern, at least on my part and a number of others on the committee, that parents are the first and most important teachers for their kids, and we would like to have them intimately involved in making those kinds of decisions. And the second thing that it does that I think is consistent with all of the principles that we've talked about in our committee is that it focuses the resources on the most at risk. Now, when you asked initially, Madam Chair, if my bill was in the shape that I wanted it to be in, obviously this is very expensive. And I think that's one of the issues that we've all been struggling with is how we're going to deal with the early learning initiatives because they are so expensive. This bill is scalable. It's very scalable because what we can do with this bill is we can modify how businesses can get credit. We can put an income max in for being able to qualify for an individual tax credit. There's a number of ways that we could make this bill compress and shape it so that it would fit the economic constraints that we might, and I don't know if we have them yet, Madam Chair, but the economic constraints we're probably going to have in this committee. The last thing that the bill does is it also addresses kindergarten. What we did in the bill is we lumped kindergarten and preschool together in terms of being able to access a grant to be able to pay for those kind of services. Now, in the bill, Madam Chair pointed out that there is an Attorney General's provision or opinion, and I think you have the line number of that. It's on page 12 of the bill, line 28. There was a concern brought to my attention because of our recent Attorney General's provision that we cannot charge any money for public education. And so what I have in here is fees or tuition charged for enrollment in an all-day kindergarten are one of the things that qualify for the tax credit. I guess I would point out that there's nothing in the bill that says public education. So it's conceivable that somebody could be going to a private kindergarten and they could access a grant for a private kindergarten. There are schools today in Minnesota that do charge for the second half of an all-day kindergarten. And I guess the question is how are they going to proceed? But I think the bill addresses the issue in an appropriate way, because if a school district cannot charge, then they could not access a grant for that purpose. So, but we could have more discussion about that, Madam Chair. I did not bring testifiers just because I knew we were going to be constrained for time, but a number of people called and asked if they could say a word or two on the bill, and if it's okay with you, Madam Chair, if there are people in the audience that would want to speak to this bill briefly,
now would be the time to come.
Yes.
To do that.
Thank you, Representative Eason. I know there's at least two folks that want to testify. Ms. Yates, if you want to come forward. No? Not going to testify? And then maybe there's one. Is there any public testimony? People want to testify for or against the bill? Representative Eastland, why don't you tell us about, you know, it seems like that you're using MELF as a vehicle to coordinate this, and could you tell us how you've been working with MELF and if they support the bill?
I will speak to that, Madam Chair. The amendment actually took MELF out of the bill. What the amendment did was it changed the language to an early childhood education access grant organization. Means any charitable nonprofit organization that is exempt from the federal tax code. It's the first paragraph. And quite frankly, ma'am, what I did was I thought about different ways that this could be used, and if we want to use our imagination, we have the myths already that are geographically kind of organized around the state. We have the EXUs. We have a number of other kinds of nonprofit organizations that are interested in this. We have our early childhood coalitions. We have what Representative Peterson has as her hubs in her bill. There's a number of ways that these organizations could form, and they would become the driving vehicle for the grants that would be given to the children that would qualify for the grants. But the Department of Education would have jurisdiction over approving an approved program.
Thank you, Representative Eastland. Welcome to the committee. We still have one more bill to go, so if you could be brief, we'd sure appreciate it.
Very brief, Madam Chair. My name is Karen Ephraim. I'm here on behalf of EdWatch, and I am here just to reiterate, as I have for other bills, our strong support of tax credit bills that empower both parents and parental choice as well as the private sector to deal with these complicated issues. And we also appreciate the fact that Representative Eastland didn't complicate the bill with thorny policy issues related to content and guidelines and accreditation, and for that reason we support it all the more. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Any other testimony? You could come now. Members, if you have any brief questions, there's time for a few questions. I represent Peterson. Well, the testifier is coming down if you still want to. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Ephraim just alluded to the fact that we don't have any way of evaluating, and this, at least as I see, the use of public tax dollars with this. It seems to be an issue. I mean, that was pleasant in her mind, but it seems to me that when you're dealing with the use, you have to have some criteria how public tax dollars are being used. I realize that it's being funneled through nonprofits, et cetera, but it seems to me that we still have accountability for public tax dollars.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, I couldn't agree more, and I think the bill lays out the framework for that. The granting organizations need to be qualified by the Commissioner of Education, and they have to report back to the Commissioner every year with detailed information about how that money is distributed and how it's used. And it needs to be; it can only be used in programs that are qualified by the Department of Education. So I think the decisions and the quality is kind of vested in the Department of Education here, and we've had a number of other discussions, and there's been a number of other bills that deal a lot with that stuff. This is primarily just to focus on how we could possibly fund some of these ideas that we've had in this committee and keep parental choice and focused resources kind of at the forefront of our initiative.
To the testifier, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And first, I want to clarify that we don't have a position on this bill. We did want to just make a few comments in the sense, as Representative Eastland mentioned, that it is consistent with a couple of our principles in the sense that it does try to target assistance to families, and in particular to low-income families. Representative Peterson just hit on a very important issue as well. That's one of our principles, is try to measure the effectiveness of the services based on child progress. And I think in the spirit, as Representative Eastland mentioned, that it's kind of a work in progress as we move through for fine-tuning and things like that. We just want to mention that if it seemed to be something that the committee may want to consider as you look at the mix of things available, and the one item that Representative Eastland mentioned was, without MELF in the bill and kind of a more general description of nonprofit entities that could be eligible recipients and distributors of the assistance to families, if the criteria is a nonprofit, perhaps, and I don't know the exact status of the MIFs, but there might be regional entities out there that this might make a logical venue to focus some of the finances through. It does open up some possibilities, perhaps. So within that spirit, just wanted to make a few comments.
Thank you. Members, are there any further questions? Now, this is one of those bills, members, that we're not rolling into. It has to travel on to another committee, so we are going to take a vote on it. Representative Eastland renews his motion that House File 1264 be recommended to pass as amended and return to the Committee on Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness for further referral to the Committee on Taxes. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The bill passes and is referred to the Committee on Taxes. Thank you, Representative Eastland. Representative Bly, if you want to chair for the last bill, which is House File 1056.
Representative Slough, would you like to move your bill?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 1056 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Bill.
Do you have any amendments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do. I'd like to move amendments DE3.
Okay. Is there discussion on the amendment? Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor of accepting the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay. Would you like to speak to the bill as amended?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, you remember way back at the beginning of committee, or a few weeks ago, that the governor came to us with his version and his bill as far as what he thinks should happen with some of the early childhood items. We have taken a look at that and look at what funding is available, and I have decided to make some changes. So I would like to review that and then respond to any questions. All the appropriations in this bill are blank until we get budget targets. So the members know that. What we're looking at in terms of for the governor's scholarship proposal is we chose instead to do two rural demonstration projects. Right now, MELF is funding scholarship projects primarily in the city of St. Paul, and I think that they need to go through their process and see how those go and see what the pros and cons and good and bad of how that goes. But there are no rural pilot projects at this time. So rather than expanding the number of pilot projects in the metro area, I'm proposing adding two rural demonstration projects and a family mentoring piece. That's what Art Rolnick had talked about. That's very important for these types of projects for the highest return. 250 kids for 4 years, kids that would be eligible, 185% of poverty, quality standards will be used. So this, in essence, is somewhat similar to the scholarship program and also to the Senate's allowance program. And it will be approximately $2 million for the biennium. The way it's structured, the Department of Human Services and the Department of Education would work with MELF to establish these two demonstration projects.
Right now, the governor had proposed a school readiness initiative, and we decided to take that out at this point. But we are working with the Department of Education. I know that they are here. And the advocates to come up with a compromise on the language, as the advocates have some concerns. So we are still working, Mr. Chair, to final some of that in the next several days. We are keeping the governor's language and funding on ECFE accountability and teacher training. We're incorporating the prevention and self-sufficiency lifelong learning articles from the governor's bill that was left out of the clone bill. So this just cleans that up. And we're adding that coordinators of ECFE should be licensed per, I saw her here, Lois Engstrom has been working with us on that. So with that, Mr. Chair and members, that's our changes to the governor's bill, and I hope you can support them.
Okay. Do you have any testifiers that wish to speak to the bill?
Anyone? Not at this time. I'm not sure if...
Anyone in the audience wish to speak?
Oh, I do. Could I have... I do have one... from NELF, yes, who is going to speak. Yeah, we've been working so hard on so many bills, Ms. Yates has been working with us on the demonstration projects.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am here from the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation. My name is Barbara Yates, and I'm here to testify in support of this bill. As I indicated to the committee previously, the NELF is using the items we had in our initial learnings. My daughter Cameron is here with me today. We had a childcare issue. I told her we're spending her summer break at the legislature, her spring break at the legislature, and I hope you'll all support me in that and not mention other places she could be. The four areas that we look at for deciding how to support things was whether there was a focus on school readiness, and we believe that this bill does do that by the scholarship demonstration programs. We also wanted to support things where the investment is most needed for those most at risk, and we believe that this bill does that as well. And another item is that it empower parents, and we think having this resource in the hands of parents to be able to direct is empowerment. And being able to help parents identify quality programs where their children will be ready for kindergarten, we think that all goes to our concerns in that area. We also believe that the other area was to optimize cost effectiveness, and we think it does that too. This is our other concern was to make sure that things that were proposed to the extent possible could be coordinated with our efforts, and I think that the language in this bill does help coordinate with the scholarship. I think it is value added to what we're doing, as Representative Sloak said. Our pilot is primarily in St. Paul. We're doing a little bit of program scholarships in Minneapolis, but we don't have a scholarship model in Greater Minnesota, and I think there's a lot to we could learn from that. So the fact that it does that, I think it's also interesting to us to see how using this amount of money, evaluating that and seeing how that compares to the other scholarship that we're doing in St. Paul, I think we could get some useful information. NELF will be willing to evaluate this proposal if a similar proposal passes, because we want to make sure that we can give you good information about both our pilot in St. Paul as well as any others that might be done. So we are happy to extend the evaluation we're doing of our projects to a project like this if the legislature passes one and the governor signs it into law.
Okay. Members, any questions for the testifier or the author of the bill? Okay. I believe we have one other person who wanted to testify.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Karen Ephraim. I'm here on behalf of EdWatch, and I just want to be sure that I understand, because the delete all was not available for the public. Is Section 8 on page 5, starting with line 5.5, now gone from the bill? Through 613, is that correct?
It's Section 8 is regarding NELF. Is that correct?
No, Section 8 is improve educational offerings and school readiness at the start of child care program.
Yes, that's deleted.
That is deleted. Well, then, Mr. Chairman, I have nothing to say right
okay.
now.
Well, thank you. Any further discussion, members? Seeing none, Representative Slawick renews her motion to have the bill laid on the omnibus early childhood and omnibus bill. Very, very good. Okay. So, what do I do now?
Mr. Chair, I think just remind the committee members that Fridays are, or Thursday is our last committee. And so we just roll this over and remind folks about Thursday and that they need to plan to be here to help hear bills till we're done. And
that's right. Okay. So, members, you got that? Thursday is our last day. We're going to hear all the bills. And Friday, I understand you're... okay. All right. You'll have a good weekend. Right? With that, I think that's all the business of the committee, and we're adjourned.